This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 368, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 368. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
What?
And Josh Flanagan.
One man will review comics with two other men.
What?
What?
We are from the website iFanboy.com, which is a website all about comic books, specifically Spider-Man comic books. No.
Where's my money?
We like all the comics from every publisher. Just this week, we're kind of more about Spider-Man. Every Wednesday, as you know, a whole bunch of comic books come out, and we go and we read a large stack of them, and one of us goes to the website and writes the Pick of the Week review, and we come here to talk about that book, as well as all the other books that came out, as well as other random bits of interesting comic book stuff. Before we get into it, we're going to warn you that Dr. Octopus is now Spider-Man.
What?
What the who?
What? So be warned. That's an example of a spoiler. We're going to give something away. So you haven't read, if you haven't read your comics yet, you might want to go back and read them and come back and listen to the show. But if you have read,
I didn't know what a spoiler was. I was just reading the copy. I was like, wow.
Yeah. So that said, though, you did read more than just the copy. You read Star Wars number one from Dark Horse. Josh, tell us all about it.
I did. It was my pick of the week on a fairly decent week also. I don't claim this to be anything other than a raw emotional response by something that was very well done. You know, there may have been better comic books out there, but this was the one I enjoyed the most, which is our mandate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, when they said Brian Wood is going to write a Star Wars book, I think I did the,
What?
What?
What? No. See, that would be more of a reaction than I actually had. But I realized, you know, I've been enjoying Brian Wood's comics more and more over the last few years. So, you know, hey, let's give it a shot. And then when you spoke to him, Ron, at New York Comic Con, and I held the camera for that, I thought, I like the cut of this guy's jib. Dude, I was thinking that the whole time.
Yeah.
I wasn't talking about either of you. There was a guy in a Gandalf outfit. But that's
he was just in the background the whole time.
And... Yeah. Oh, no, his jib had a wonderful cut to it. but listen. This Star Wars book takes place immediately after Episode 4. Battle of Yavin takes place. Chewie doesn't get a medal. And then Leia has to get out of the office, basically, is where we are. She's had it up to here with Mon Mothma, who, by the way, ball breaker.
Yeah, who knew?
She's like, you get off the ship, and they're like, Mon Mothma to your office, please. Whoa.
Wow. Deck officer. Deck officer.
The deck officer was a dick.
The deck officer was a dick. Yeah.
Oh. He showed her, though. It was like two snaps to Luke, but we'll get to that. at Luke and takes Leia along with him and Wedge. They're scouting some worlds.
I'm sorry,
they're
who, trying to who, find Luke and who?
Wedge Antilles, Hero of the Rebellion.
There you go.
I will say Wedge as a shortener, but his full name is Wedge Antilles, Hero of the Rebellion. That should be known.
Yes.
If it isn't, I don't know why you're listening to this. They're off looking for a new place to set up a house, and the Empire's chasing them all over the place. And there's a little dogfight action. And Wood had said specifically that his favorite part was writing the dogfighting between the sort of X-wing fighters and the TIE fighters. And he was great at it. It was really fun. And it was just like, we know that nothing's gonna happen. No, like we know that episode 5 is gonna happen after this.
Yeah.
So he can't do a whole hell of a lot to change anything or bring much new to the table. But what we can do is spend time with these characters in a way and in a place that we hadn't in, but it's all very familiar. And I really liked it. I thought he did the voices really well. I was really impressed by by Han Solo.
He came over to your house and he did. He's like, then yeah. Leia says, Luke, I don't know. We should go do this.
Well, the thing was, is he kept going back and forth between a British accent and not. And I was like, that's how you nail it. No, I thought that the voice of his characters was really good. I thought his Han Solo was really fun. And, like, he was like a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
You know, he was kind of a little scumbagness to him, which I liked. And it was a good read. And it was satisfying in a way that, like, a lot of Star Wars comics that I've checked out just weren't. They didn't talk to me. They didn't do anything for me.
I think the magic formula with this is that, and it should be, I mean, as longtime listeners will know that Star Wars is very important to all three of us. I mean, it's probably the closest thing to religion that I get.
Mm-hmm.
Less so after the prequels. We've kind of faded
all over this galaxy.
Yeah, but there was a time where Star Wars was kind of the be all end all, like mid late 90s. It was just like, yeah, I couldn't get enough of it. And that was the time when I know I, and I think Connor, you did, Josh, I don't remember if you did or not, but read a lot of the Expanded Universe books.
Yep. Yes.
And like those are all books that took place after Jedi, so kind of continuing the story, but it was with those characters. And like, I think the reason why I haven't really gotten into the Star Wars books at Dark Horse recently have been because they're Knights of the Old Republic and they're telling Clone Wars, they're telling stories that are way earlier or characters I don't know and all that sort of stuff. But here, this just felt like an old glove just putting on, just like, ah, here we are back in, you know, these great characters and this world.
And that was exactly it. It just felt really right. There's not a thing that I could point to that was like super spectacular about any of it, but you know what it did have? It had a little touch of frustrated middle management Vader.
Yes.
So you're gonna give my office to this guy?
He got demoted.
He tried to throw Tarkin under the bus.
Yep.
he was like, but Tarkin and Vader and Palpatine wasn't having any of that.
Yeah.
Big head Palpatine was just like, no, this is your failure.
Yeah. What's interesting is I'm currently reading the new book Scoundrels.
How is that?
But before we get to that, it takes place in the same time period as this.
Ooh,
so it's kind of like I've got these separate stories in my head. They're both having to deal with the immediate aftermath of A New Hope, and it's interesting.
Interesting.
Did they ever deal with in the movie? This is the central point of that book: is that Han lost the money he was going to pay Jabba with.
Right.
Did they ever deal with that in the movie? Because in the movie, he got paid at the end of A New Hope.
Never paid Jabba. Never paid him.
Never paid him.
Because what happened was that so he gets the money, and I assume all those boxes they're loading were just
money.
Boxes of credits of what, you know, like just money. And so then he helps, and then when Empire picks up, they're on Hoth, and
he said Horde Mandel.
Because they had a run in with a bounty hunter, Horde Mandel. I think he was gonna go pay off Jabba when he was intended to leave Hoth to go pay off Jabba because he can't live with the Death Mark, and that it was too close to call on Horde Mandel.
Okay.
So he has. So I guess my assumption in Empire was that he just never made it back to pay Jabba off.
Okay. Well, in Scoundrels, he had lost the money. I think he got pirates took it. He got robbed basically. And so now Scoundrels is basically Ocean's 11 with Han Solo as Danny Ocean.
Is it good?
Well, I'm only about 50 pages in, but it's fun, right? It's fun so far.
When he goes to see General Rekin, and he goes, "A death mark's hard to live with."
Yeah, exactly. So
well, everybody knows about it. They talk about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, exactly. This is fertile ground, is what we're saying. And I remember those old novels. There was like the Han Solo Adventures or the Lando.
That's Star's Egg, wasn't it?
Those were like mid trilogy, before trilogy stories. So those were fun.
Well, there
too.
Was Shadows of the Empire.
Well, Shadows of the Empire takes place after Empire.
Isn't there one of them that takes place between?
Nope.
Between Empire and Jedi.
Yeah, that's Shadows of the Empire.
Right. That's and I always that was always kind of one of my favorite because it sort of fit in nicely.
And then it tied in with the video game.
Yeah.
That was with Zizor or whatever his name is. Remember the green guy?
Zizor. Prince Zizor.
Yeah. Yeah. He's also in Scoundrels. So I like this. I thought this was really fun. I thought the art was good in that it didn't try to hew too closely to the character, the actors.
That was very specifically a thing that I noticed. I thought it was a little cartoony, but in kind of a good way. Like, yep. I thought it fit really well. But, you know, they weren't straight-on photo models of the characters, but they looked like them enough that it wasn't – like, the art did its job really, really well.
You know what it felt like? It felt a whole lot like the 80s Marvel comics.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in terms of that look, in terms of the cartooning, in terms of stuff like that. I mean, this was great. I don't know. I don't think it was my pick of the week, but it was one of the more fun things I read this whole time. And now I'm totally on board.
It was interesting. I wonder if, because at this point in the story, Luke has still got it pretty good for Leia.
Yes, and you could tell.
And I wonder how much they're going to deal with that because.
Well, if you listen to the Don't Miss with Brian Wood, where Paul talked to Brian Wood for 40 minutes on iFanboy Don't Miss last week, he actually talks specifically about that, how he dances around that and has them kind of flirting but you get a sense of a relationship and a caring for each other, but it's he's trying to drift it towards like a sibling like relationship, you know, and less romantic. So, but yeah.
It was still kind of romantic in Empire, which is
Totally. Well, she used them to make Han jealous.
Sure,
but
Luke was still into it. That's the point.
Yeah,
my point.
I don't know
he ever wasn't. That whole silent guy thing was just it was his new character he was trying on. Like, maybe she'll notice me here.
Yeah, obviously the me caring didn't work. So let me see what I can do. I care.
No, that's the thing is that he gave up that.
Yeah,
that sort of aw shucks farm boy. He's smart enough, you know. He's got the force and everything. Like, he's like, oh, this isn't working. And then he came back and he's like, I'm all new and all badass.
What actually is little known fact about the force is there's actually a friend zone detection kind of awareness of in the force. And he's like, oh, I've been friend zoned. Okay, I need to change my strategy. Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely would have. So.
the thing that people don't know is that in Jedi, when he shows up at Jabba's palace, like she had no idea that he was going to do that whole character thing. Because you know, with
the
black
badass in black,
like she was as surprised as anybody.
Sure.
Because the last time she saw him, he was still like Womp Rat this and T-16 that, and you know,
time she saw him, he was all pouty and I lost my hand and I lost my friend and
but he was still bringing up Womp Rats.
That's
they cut that stuff out of the movie.
Yeah. You're gonna die here.
That's where Kirshner really came in. It was all of this stuff.
Marquand.
Yeah.
The amount of knowledge we have about the original trilogy, by the way, people might know this, is staggering.
Yeah,
I was thinking,
the thing is, I know it sort of lays dormant for a little while, and then we start to pick at it, and then it just starts to come.
It's a muscle
out.
You have to work it.
The first time I read in this comic book, it all came flooding back to me like specs, like ship specs and stuff like that.
I bought it, and they're working with Incom.
Yeah,
like they've got a corporate rate.
Oh, they only
get used machines.
That was the one not strange thing, but sort of interesting thing about the book was that they dealt a lot with how they got their supplies, money,
the infrastructure. Yeah.
I really like that Brian Wood is the kind of writer who's going to be thinking of that, though. Like, it's one of those things that became really clear in
DMZ.
Northlanders. You know, it was a little bit of how do these people live? Those are the kind of questions that I really like exploring.
Well, now we know how many credits the Death Star cost.
Yeah. A lot. Trillions.
I don't read enough comics that involve infrastructure.
Yeah.
Well, listen, they could have been talking about trade agreements.
They could have been.
Also, recruitment's way down.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it was great. It was fun. It was a pleasant surprise at how good it was. Because we shit on licensed comics a little bit.
Oh, like sure.
Let's be honest, we do. And this is a case of where, you know, like it can, like G.I. Joe Cobra, stuff like that, it can be fun, you know? So,
yeah. And, you know, and how long, do you know how long this is supposed to run for?
It's an ongoing.
1 year.
Oh, he's got a 1 year contract right now, but he said if everything's going well after a year, he'll continue. Whether or not Dark Horse can or not will be the story, will be the question.
Who will publish it? Whether it'll actually be published, whether he's
actually Brian, he's just gonna do it on his own at home. He's gonna like photocopy them and just
he works for Marvel too.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Happen.
So am I supposed to believe now that after all of that, Peter Parker's not dead? Is that what's happening now?
I know that you were livid, but I don't remember exactly which direction you were livid in.
Well, I was led to believe that he was dead, thus destroying the entire history of Spider-Man,
yep.
and nothing would ever be the same, and that he would never come back, and this wasn't just another story about Peter being in a bad spot.
Nope.
But it is.
It is. You know, and not only is it in another bad spot, and I wrote a review of it on the site.
Of what?
Of Superior Spider-Man number one.
Yep.
And I gave it 4 out of 5 stars because I actually really did quite enjoy it. I really like what Slott's doing. I thought Stegman was great. But it occurred to me after I wrote the review, after I reread it, that do you remember Haunt?
Yeah,
I
yes.
do.
Yeah, this is – it's like, oh, so they've read Haunt.
Right? I confess to not remember Haunt well enough to
– Haunt was basically a dude who had –
I bet Todd noticed it.
His dead brother – was a spirit inside of his head and would help him, like would appear as this apparition and like could help him and like kind of two people in his head.
Well, it's like Firestorm. It's a lot of
yeah. Oh, it's like a Firestorm. Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't gonna get this because I'm not really interested and I've never really been a big Dan Slott fan, but I did get it because of all the hoopla and I enjoyed it. It was fine. It is not enough to keep me reading because I'm not really a fan.
That was what I said. Like I'm not invested in it. You know, like it was fine if you like this.
that's my typical line,
but like. Like if you like Spider-Man comics like they've been for a while, they're not really my taste, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't anything wrong with it. It was well drawn. I know that some people don't like Stegman's new style. I like that it's really loose. It's not his new style, it's that he's inking himself instead of somebody else.
Yeah, I think he needs an inker.
Yeah. I get that. I really like how loose it is and how sort of like it's a little angular at times, a little scratchy.
I like the angles. Don't get me wrong. I like that. I just think I think it's a little rougher than it could be a little tighter. Yeah. So, but, you know, I thought it was great. I mean, I think he's got a ton of energy. I mean, it's like we've said it before when he was doing Scarlet Spider and back when he did the one issue of Amazing Spider-Man. Like, he is born to draw Spider-Man.
Absolutely. Like
he's great.
What's funny is that since I haven't been keeping up with the series, I sort of dissociated myself mentally from it. I didn't remember it was him.
Yeah.
And for the first two pages, I was like, who is this?
Nice.
I was like, it's not Ramos. And then I went, oh, right. Like it looked really good. I mean, as much as I think he does need an inker, it did look great.
The only thing, here's the thing though. When is somebody going to ask Peter why he's talking like that? Like, no one is bringing up that he's like, quiet woman. Like, no
like
one
that.
Mentions that?
Honestly, if you started talking like that, we would just assume you have some sort of really bad mental break and just
or doing some sort of bit. I mean, if Josh was doing it, we'd be like, "Oh, he's doing this." It's
doing that bit for like 3 weeks.
Well, I don't know. I think that was a part of my criticism of Slott and the writing is that Slott's writing tends to be a little. I use the word obvious.
Yeah, on the nose.
You know. I'm sorry?
On the nose, obvious.
Yeah, obvious. And so, you know, and he's writing stuff that's clear we can read between the lines and understand, but he's having it be verbalized. And I think that works on one degree and that is really accessible for even kids to be reading. And so, like, he truly is writing an all-ages Spider-Man, even though that does get a little violent at times. But for us, it's kind of like, all right, well, yeah, we get it, move on, that sort of thing. So I think he's got to watch that. That's a fine line to balance. I think that's part of the story is that someone's going to be like, what's up? You're acting weird, but it's going to take more than one issue.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But he's been doing it for three.
Yeah. So
I like that he does that. And I recognize that it's not for me and that's fine. Like I like that, that a comic book has that voice. I just wish that it actually had that sort of age crossover appeal that I don't think it actually does. I think it's just make old people happy.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? I don't know. I just like it. This definitely flies in my, you know, a batshit crazy idea and let's see where it goes. You know, but
I
like,
appreciate that.
Yeah, but it's like Peter's going to be back. Clearly, by the end of this issue, you know that Peter's going to be back.
You know how I know that?
Yeah.
Because he's Marvel Comics' most important character. Yeah.
Well, I don't know about that, but he's
absolutely he is. Yeah,
he's not.
He's the face of the company.
Yeah, I know. But with Sony and the movie, it's less so. They're starting to pull back on that. Yeah, but
they can't pull back on it.
Eventually,
he's Marvel's Batman and Superman. Absolutely,
he's Marvel's Superman.
Yeah. So I'm curious if you guys know where I should route. It took three issues for me to start routing my fanboy rage at Avengers Arena.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Because of Darkhawk.
Issue number three, you start fucking with Darkhawk, you're fucking with me, Dennis Hulpless.
See, I didn't know that there was anything to be offended with Darkhawk. I was like, hey, Darkhawk's in here. Ron will like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Until he gets his heart ripped out.
His amulet got ripped out, and now he's powerless.
He's fighting in the next issue.
Yeah, the only saving grace was I turned and I saw the cover of next issue was Darkhawk. But he's going to die because we know that X-23 is alive come in 30 days from now from the first issue. So fuck, Darkhawk's going to die.
You know what's funny?
Screw this. Comics ruined my childhood.
It's funny is that – or ruined your portfolio.
Yeah.
I saw this was on the list, and I enjoyed issue one quite a bit. Could tell you what happened, you know, the main plot points and everything. Couldn't tell you a thing about issue two. In fact, when I saw the list, I went, did I miss issue two?
Interesting.
I read it. I have it. I found it. But I could not tell you what happened,
yep.
Who died, what was going on. I really did thought I missed it. And that probably doesn't speak well for my continued involvement in the series, but I'm still sticking with it, at least until Darkhawk buys it.
just to watch me, yes. similar to the Hellblazer and Josh.
I want to be able to participate in the discussion.
You want to watch me? You want to watch me suffer, basically.
Yes, yes. I appreciate. I'm not invested in any of the characters, but it's good. Like I'm interested. I want to know what's going to happen.
Oh, it's a good. No, it's a great series. I mean, this Cammy, the character that this issue mainly focused on, I've never even heard of.
And yeah, so, I really like the way that she was written. I don't know. Like I feel like Hopeless is writing at a. He writes more like a veteran than he is. How's that?
Yeah.
Like this feels like I was like, this is really well done. It's a good comic book and it's a good ensemble cast. Because I don't know who anybody is, I don't know what's going to happen. I have no expectations for it.
Yeah.
Well, you know that the last two survivors are.
Not really.
Well, we think X-23. We do. Yeah. The first issue opened up with X-23 and Hazmat, but who knows if they were the last two. I don't remember if it actually said they were the last two or not.
Well, just like Connor doesn't remember the second one, I don't remember almost anything I've read.
Yeah.
So things like that are lost on me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did like that Darkhawk was deemed to be too old to be here.
Yeah, and
that was really funny.
Yeah.
Not really a teenager.
Yeah, it's true. He's like, once a teen hero, always a teen hero.
Aren't you in your 20s? I've had that conversation.
Yep. So Sweet Tooth comes to an end with issue number 40, and I got to say, this probably would have gotten my pick of the week. Purely what put it over the top was the 6 feet under ending.
I can't believe it's been 40 issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they all out on time, all written and drawn.
Yep. This issue has been the best one in a long while.
I agree. It ended really well. I really enjoyed the reveal.
Yeah.
I like the way that the first, like the quick cold open, I guess, was set up. And you're like, oh, that looks like Sweet Tooth. Wait, but who's that other guy? Oh, he's got a pig nose. You know, like you had to look at all this stuff and you turn the page and you sort of see what the plan was for the world and how it came around. And yeah, that 6 feet under ending was really nice. I thought it was a really, really strong ending issue.
It was really strong. It gave a resolution. You see what happens. Like it was super, super
time.
Strong and got emotional. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I got emotional.
Well, no, but whenever they went, that 6 feet under ending, man, still to this day, that was like 10 years ago now. Wasn't it? That was a long time ago. That ending still, it just kills me. It kills me. The watching everybody die and seeing their whole life, you're like, they ended up together, they had a kid, or it's like it's all this, like, and just seeing this like fast forward of a life and then seeing him, you know, Sweet Tooth as the old grandpa kind of, you know, surviving and helping to
it's good create. They did it in one issue though, because it probably would have dragged.
Oh yeah, and this almost read like a little mini graphic novel almost. I mean, this was way more top shelfy than anything that Sweet Tooth's been so far. Like this is a contained. You can almost say this is a contained story. Like you can just read it on its own without reading the whole series. Which is an interesting way to take it. Yeah, because it starts off with the first words of this is a story, and it just and using that device.
That bit where it was repeated there. I was like, that's pretty strong.
No, it was really, really really strong. He should be really proud of this issue.
Yeah, I get the sense that like you know for a while he was doing it.
Yeah,
because he was getting through it, but this was he wanted to make sure that he ended it. He ended it strong and put a lot into it. And I think it was more went into these pages than a bunch of the issues I'd read. And also, Vertigo is saving me money left and right now because they're just canceling everything or ending. Sorry,
true.
I know.
There you go. I can't wait. What's the countdown to Hellblazer? How many more issues?
Two, right?
It's two.
Oh, I can't wait.
It's gonna be an epic show.
What's that about? Last month you were like, I understand, Josh.
Now we've gone through the stages of grief with you. Now we're just looking forward to the rage,
the mocking.
Yeah,
I feel like I've already come to accept it.
It all depends on how it ends. Again, if it ends with him getting hit by a bus,
yeah,
you're going to lose it, and it's going to be awesome.
There's a part of me that would be unhappy with that, but there is also a part of me that really would like the randomness of that kind of thing. Just the audacity of it.
What if he becomes Spider-Man?
What if he's in Spider-Man's head?
I wouldn't mind seeing the reaction
to that. Peter Parker and Hellblazer in Otto Octavius's head.
That would be a licensing masterpiece. The deal's in place for that. Anyway, I'm guessing that in addition to Sweet Tooth, a lot of people would have gone with Thor, God of Thunder.
That's so good.
I spent a lot of time giggling over the photo of Jason Aaron in the back.
With yes. I was like, who'd approve that one?
The letters column header, which is even funnier when you turn the page and he's got dialogue.
I'm going to it.
Very funny.
Oh, God.
This is one of those ones that it was a really great issue, and I thought that it did the three different time periods better than any of the other ones.
I have to not look at it. It just makes me laugh.
That was like for Twitter, right?
No, I think it was for the letter column.
I've seen that before, I feel like. Anyway, I was one of those ones where like this was great for all sorts of reasons, but the last page is the only thing that I'm walking away from it remembering in a good way.
Yeah.
It was really fun. I don't know. I like how this is all being set up.
It's just amazing. It's just epic.
What are you looking at?
I mean, I want to put on like metal and yes. I want to read these issues, and they're just like, and it's just like the Palace of Infinity and the library where all
this is cosmic Marvel done. Yeah. At its
omnipotent city, nexus of all the gods. Like, that's amazing. That's like, oh yeah, it's just great. And Ribic is like continuing to, this is the best work I've ever seen him done. Facial expression.
This is double shipping though. So
yeah, the helm. The Thor's helm, I love.
I like defeated, like, he's like, well, I can't walk, so I'll crawl.
Yeah. I love the dead destroyer arm. Mm-hmm.
If I can be allowed a pun, I think there's a thundering beat behind this book. It feels like there's this thumping music, you know, in the back of the scenes. I don't know what it is. It just has this feeling of.
I will allow that pun.
Okay. It's I love it. The pacing is great. I love that it bounces between the Thors. You don't get too sort of sick of one, and then by that time you get to the next one, you're already looking for the third Thor. So I think the way the structure is built together has been really helpful to the story.
Yeah, I just love that there was somebody that Thor yells out, "Lord Librarian."
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, it's great.
Again, the only problem is the design of the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very top cow.
We did get to spend some time with him this time, though, and yeah. I think that it's been parsed out in the correct amount.
Played some Scrabble, hung out.
I'd like to see some motivation behind his god butchering.
Yeah.
I mean, I get some, and it's fine if I don't, but I'd like to know why.
It's fine.
Fine. I really liked the redesign of Steppenwolf in Earth 2 number 8.
Yeah?
It's one of the rare DC redesigns I've liked.
All right.
I think it's a bit more intimidating than the old one, but... I really like this was an issue where we sort of sat back and revealed who the main villain of the book is going to be, or at least for now. And
what?
In this, we find out Steppenwolf is still on Earth, and he's taken over this country, and he has the daughter of Wonder Woman at his side, kind of like Darkseid and Orion and Mr. Miracle and Highfather.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect of
it. Nice parallel. Yeah, I didn't even pick up on that. Good job.
Bringing the child of your greatest enemy to raise as your own weapon. And I like that part of it. I think he's setting up a really nice world. The next issue, we get back to the heroes and Dr. Fate. I'm enjoying this sort of very slow, not slow in a bad way, but rollout of characters and world building.
Well, it's a whole other world that I like that it's like independent of the insanity over in the New 52, and it just kind of like it's this own little pocket universe, and I like seeing how it develops. I think Yildiz Senyar is a great alternate artist to Nicola Scott. I think if they trade up between these two, the book will remain like it's. As seamless as can be, you know, like clearly it's not Nicola Scott, but I think he did a good job in filling in.
And it was the second comic this week from DC that ended with somebody holding up a severed head.
Oh yeah. What was the other one?
Swamp Thing.
Oh yeah.
Severed heads abound.
Was severed it heads? Severed because it still had the spine.
Well, severed from the dangling. Body, the spine still dangles.
I don't know. We have to look up what severed means.
Well, the spine is severed at some point.
Yeah.
Everything is severed.
Yeah.
Ugh. I don't know why we're always end up talking about Scott Snyder.
Well, if you haven't read Scott Snyder's Severed book, you can go order it from Amazon. iFanboy.com/Amazon. You can click on the banner, and any purchases you make, comics, video games, clothes, stereo equipment, whatever you might need, goes towards helping keep the lights on over at iFanboy. So we want to thank everybody for doing that. You get some great deals over at Amazon, so go to iFanboy.com/Amazon, click on the banner, and go to town. So, cool.
Speaking of last pages, I think that Walking Dead 106 was another one of those, like, and this is the thing that Kirkman does very well, is to sort of give you the last page. But again, the only thing I remember out of this issue, and it was good. It was like a continuation of the last one. But the end of it was one of those, I want the next issue immediately.
Yes, agreed.
Because basically the whole time, Bad Dude's been walking around going, I don't know what I'm going to do with you. And like, we don't either. And then at the end, he'd clearly decided, but we don't get to know it for a month.
Yep. Yeah. Painful.
Sorry. But it gave me that special comic book issue feeling.
Yeah. I feel like this is coming out biweekly. I mean, I know it's not, but I feel like I'm reading it a lot, you know, like maybe because I just went from not reading it a lot to reading the hard, you know, reading the hardcovers yearly to now I'm in issues. And I feel like I'm getting a lot of Walking Dead. You know?
Well, in this world, it's hard not to.
Yeah.
I think
it's great, though.
It's good.
I love Negan. I think he's a great character. So I read Action Comics number 16 and I immediately thought, does Grant Morrison know about the New 52? Does he know that they – because it seems like he doesn't care.
No.
That's kind of rad.
I know, isn't it? So they have Lois and Jimmy meet at the statue of Superman holding the bird that was erected after Superman died fighting Doomsday. I'm like, did that happen in this new continuity?
I think it did. I think they instead of wiping out the old continuity, they just crammed it all into a 5-year period.
Yeah.
Which is stupid. Again, yep. Stupid. So,
yeah. I just thought that was funny.
Great Chris Sprouse art in the backup.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
Sprouse is somebody we don't get enough stuff from.
He doesn't do a lot, or at least a lot of stuff that I see, but yeah. I enjoyed it.
So the End Times of Bram and Ben number one is a first issue of a miniseries from Image, co-written by James Osmus and Jim Fistante with art by Rem Brew. Osmus I've read, I'm not reading his Gambit over at Marvel, but I read his Thief of Thieves. I enjoyed it. I really liked this. This was a more Chew-esque take on the Rapture. Rem Brew's art is very Guillory-esque.
I saw that actually because I checked it out. I didn't read it, but I did look at it, and that was the first thing I thought.
It was very Chew-esque, but in a good way, not in a bad way. And the story is very different than Chew. It's a different kind of world and that sort of thing. But basically, the Rapture happens, and unlike Remender Strange Girl, where the Earth gets invaded by demons, stuff like that, it's just like the world just keeps spinning, and people just keep on living, and the people who didn't get accepted are down. And one of the characters got pulled up to heaven. The character Bram, he went up in the Rapture, and then they sent him back because it was a clerical error. They invited the wrong Bram up to heaven. And so, but he got a glimpse of what heaven was like, and now he's declared himself to be the Antichrist, and that's where the book kind of went off from there. So kind of a more comedic take on religious stuff like that. So if you're super religious, I don't know if this is the book for you, but it was fun. I enjoyed it.
That could go for a lot of comics.
Yeah. True.
Punisher Warzone, I wrote 106. That's wrong.
Number
it's three. Yeah.
It's been a lot of issues.
Yeah, I wish. That's what I'm telling you about this. Thor and Punisher have a chat and a brew.
I thought that Rucka wrote a pretty good Thor.
He did. The whole time I was thinking, I was like, this is pretty good. And then I was like, oh, yeah, it's not Jason Aaron. Because it worked for me, totally. I just really dug it. It sucks that it's going to be over soon. But this was really fun. Like, all the Avengers, like, have this grudging respect for the Punisher. I just really like Thor's warrior-based perspective on what was going on with Frank Castle. It was just a neat little moment to spend with the two of them, I thought.
Yeah, I like that. I like that each one has a different take on him. I mean, obviously, Rucka's Punisher is a bit more complex than the standard Marvel Universe Punisher, but I like that. I mean, he's a murderer, but they also have things about him that they can respond to.
Yeah. I think one of the things really interesting is I really didn't like Chiquetto's art, you know, way back when he started, but I really like this.
This
it's
is not
great.
Him now, though.
Oh, it is not?
No. It's not. No.
Well, that
it's
would
Carmine DiGiandomenici.
Oh, that's the dude who did Magneto Testament.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I also like that guy.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well,
so
it is very different then. So is what you're saying.
It's different artists, yes.
So admittedly, this current arc of Wolverine, the X-Men with Frankenstein, I haven't been loving. Mm-hmm. Like, but this issue put me over it. I was like, it was just great because it was basically the X-Men shake off the magic spell that has them thinking they're circus members and they fight the circus. And there's a lot of comedy, physical comedy. There's a lot of funny lines. But for me, it all boils down to the one page where the border is Dupe kicking ass.
Yeah, using the gutters like that to show Dupe fighting around everybody else was really inspired. I like this arc a lot because it reminded me of the old X-Men stories where you'd open an issue up and the X-Men would be, you know, caught in some sort of mind trap or somewhere else, and you have to figure out why this is happening and how they're going to get out of it. This one drops you right in the middle of it, basically, and I liked that part of it.
Yeah. No, it really ended. It ended very, very strong, and like I laughed as much as I enjoyed the fight and all that stuff. Like, you know, like very lighthearted. Like I love it. I love this book.
Yeah, The Phantom Stranger number 4. I've been struggling with this series because the Phantom Stranger is always one of my favorite characters.
Oh, you and Dan DiDio.
And Dan DiDio has been writing it until this issue. J.M. DeMatteis is now doing the dialogue and the script, and much better.
Oh, yeah?
Much, much, much better. Suddenly the people are talking like human beings, which they weren't doing before, and it was really rough. so it makes me believe that Didier was plotting Omak and Giffen was doing the dialogue, because clearly dialogue is not a strong suit. They were literally, everyone talked like a robot. And in this basically the story, Phantom Stranger has a family, a secret family that he tries to connect with humanity through. And I was wondering why he had a family, considering he had no interpersonal skills, because he talked to everybody like they were, you know, demons. But now he talks like a human being in this issue when he's a person.
There you go.
And but the art's been really good. Brent Anderson's been inked by Philip Tan, and the combination of styles has been really kind of interesting. A lot of cross-hatching and a lot of sort of sketchy lines, and they're really dealing with all the paranormal characters, like the Pandora girl we haven't seen since the beginning. She's been a character in this, and Frankenstein in this issue, the Justice League Dark, and Constantine and the Spectre's coming up, and so they're dealing with that whole world, and I just love this character so much. I just happy finally he's readable. I was on the edge of dropping it.
Hey,
yeah.
Well, that's cool. Nice.
Yeah. So those are the books that we enjoyed this week that came out, but you go to ifanboy.com/comics, which is all patched up and working the way it should be. you can go and do your pull list. You can do your pull list, and you can rate your books and pick your pick of the week. And we want to go over the top 5 picks of the week from the iFanboy community. And coming in at number 5 was The End Times of Bram and Ben, number 1 from Image Comics, got 7.4%. Number 4 was Josh's pick of the week with Star Wars number 1 with 9.9%. Number 3 was the small population that didn't ruin their life with Superior Spider-Man number 1. That got 12.1%. Number 2 was Thor God of Thunder number 4 with 29.7%. And the number 1 book that was the pick of the week for the iFanboy community was Sweet Tooth number 40 with 33.2%. And this is all at the time of recording, so if you go back and check it, they might be a little different. Numbers might change, but it looks like Sweet Tooth was the winner for the community this week.
That's nice.
Isn't it?
I feel like we've been along with that book for a long time. So
we have, yeah. That's what's getting scary, is that books that have started and ended within our run of this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's going to happen a lot. But it was like that was also a guy that nobody knew.
Yeah.
Read his indie books and then watched him get mainstream work and then watched him conclude a long Vertigo series.
Yep.
And I went, oh, Christ, what have I done with my life?
Con2112 reviewed Animal Man number 16. And you can be like Con2112 and go to ifanboy.com/comics, and you can make your pull list, rate and review your books. And if you write a good review, we'll feature it on the podcast. And Con2112 says about Animal Man 16, first he gave the story a 4 out of 5, and the art a 4 out of 5. And no one made it a pick of the week.
No one.
Con2112 says, while I began to find myself initially disappointed with the first two chapters of the Rotworld saga, after anxiously anticipating the crossover event for a year, it has finally reached the epic proportions I had hoped for with the conclusion of Animal Man 15 and this issue. As it comes to close to its climax next month, we finally see the team the Red Kingdom has put together approaching what seems to be inevitably a massive threat and one of the more fun takes of the DCU I've read in a long time. The last pages of both Animal Man and its sister book Swampy Thing, were an unfuckwithably badass. I don't know if that's proper.
They were unfuckwithably badass. They could not be fucked with in the way
that they were. I suppose were, not we're, I see.
Yeah. Listen, I can't make fun of these people.
I've done a 360 on this story.
Have you? Because I dropped away.
In that I started really enjoying the Rot World saga in the very beginning. And I very quickly got tired of it. I think it's because you got two chapters every time it came out. It felt like a lot. But by now I've come back around to the beginning in that I really enjoyed these last two issues of Animal Man and Swamp Thing, the latest chapters. I really enjoyed this world, the story. I think the characters are interesting. I think what's going on is interesting. I'm really digging it.
Yeah.
I'm as shocked as anyone. Trust me. But here I am.
All right. Fair enough.
Standing before you, bear.
Yeah. All right. Our next review comes from Pete Valdez, who reviewed BPRD, Abyss of Time, number one, and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And 0.8% of you made it your pick of the week. And Pete Valdez says, I'm quite behind on BPRD. Right now I'm enjoying volume 2 of their excellent and economical omnibuses. Because of the work of the incredible James Herron, I elected to throw caution to the wind and jump ahead because the Hellboy verse titles make it just so easy. This is a nice story that started out like many BPRD tales do, with some garden variety field agents looking at mysterious occult paraphernalia. One artifact they find serves as a vehicle to show us a glimpse of the past, and this is where the real fun takes place. Herron's springing, textured, and tactile images really deliver as we are treated to some fantasy-flavored goblin smashing. What could be just another fun paranormal tale is elevated by the masterful hand of a powerful artist. This book is a great case for the importance of art in this writer-dominated comics climate. Also, let me quickly add one more shekel of praise atop Dave Stewart's mountain of acclaim. Give this great book a look.
So. I wholeheartedly endorse that. I was happy to see James Herron back.
Yeah,
I don't know why everyone doesn't hire him to do all of the comic books.
He's good.
This is what I'm saying.
Go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can write your reviews. And like Connor's mentioned, we'll get him on the show.
Yeah. You enjoyed this more than Hellboy, I assume?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. This was a fun little story. And it's a, you know, I always like the BPRD red shirt stories.
Just one of those. Nice.
There's just tons of them. And they just, some stuff happens and... you know, the guy's a masterful storyteller. He's a great artist. He's my favorite guy to come along since what's his name? Oh, I just completely lost it. The classic guy.
Guy Fieri?
Guy Davis?
No, yeah, Guy Davis. No.
Guy Fieri.
Yes, Guy Fieri.
We're going to blow you away with some tater shrimp tots.
Sorry. What happened? I blanked.
Let's do some email. The first email is from Justin. I know we've done this question before, but we'll do it again.
We're beat.
Justin says, since West Wing became streaming on Netflix, I have started watching it for the first time, and I wondered if you could cast the Bartlett administration with comic book characters, who would you pick? If that seems hard, then I'll settle for the iFanboy staff instead, which is a repeat question, but your writers have changed a bit since then. Please only mention things from the first 4 seasons, because I'm not finished with it yet, and if I've promised swift retribution on those who spoil it for me, and I've only watched the first 4 seasons, so I'm not going
to... Did we cast the iFanboy staff as the
Yeah, but
people?
Something's changed since then.
Yeah.
What's changed?
Somebody made a striking admission.
I have completed the first season of The West Wing, and now I'm on season 2.
Yeah.
I the unthinkable has happened that I lifted my ban on political dramas, and purely out of desperation as to not having anything to watch at the gym, I'm now watching it.
That's
so
true,
I get it now. So I get it now.
Because on Netflix, there's nothing else.
I've been through a lot.
Wow.
Can't tell you how many documentaries I've watched at that gym. I just watched Craigslist Joe. That was all right. That was actually decent. I was going to watch that.
Well, Maura Tierney's gone now, so you should be all set.
Maura Tierney?
No, on what's her name? On West Wing in the first season.
Maura Tierney was on ER.
Or Moira Kelly.
Moira Kelly, sorry.
I just like how they don't even they don't even mention it. She just disappeared.
The daughter on the first.
She went upstairs to the Cunningham house and never came down.
The daughter on the first season of Weeds.
Yeah.
The other Hodes kid.
Gone.
Although she came back.
Let's do the staff again.
Who was I? Who was I when we did it first? And who am I? I don't even know.
You were Josh.
Okay, I approve.
You were Josh.
Josh is Sam.
Am I or am I Toby?
No, you're Sam. You're not grumpy enough to be Toby. Paul is Toby.
Okay.
Oh, Paul is Toby. Yeah.
You're Sam because you're very earnest, but you're also kind of awkward.
Okay. Thank you. Incredibly good looking.
Who are you?
I don't know.
You're
Is he Leo or is he Bartlett?
I think he's CJ.
you do some nice gams.
Wait a minute.
Talk about what happens later, but
yeah,
you'll be fine.
Don't. Timothy Busfield is fantastic.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's great.
He's maybe one of the best things about the show, and they've just parsed him out just a little bit at a time. Yeah. That goes on for a while too.
Good.
That story. That's good stuff.
Let's not answer this question. Let's just talk about the West Wing.
I don't know what world we're in anymore.
I didn't want to answer his question. That's not why.
He wanted to out me. That's all he wanted to do.
Yeah. No, I just thought. Well, we talked about Star Wars for a while in the beginning.
Yeah.
How can we keep this train
Ron,
rolling?
What did you think of the cliffhanger season one?
It was all right. It was somewhat predictable. Right. I wasn't as shocked as you led me to believe I would be.
I think you want to know what's going to happen. That's all.
Yeah, you want to know what's going to happen, but I kind of saw it coming though. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were hinting towards
break your heart at the end of season three. I'll tell you that much.
All right. On to our next email then. Sean says, lately I've been thinking about switching to digital on the Marvel and DC titles that I've read. So my question is, how is the experience of reading comics on a tablet? I'm looking into getting a Kindle Fire HD for Christmas. Oh, it's a little late. One of the biggest reasons I wanted is to read comics to save money and, more importantly, storage space.
Too late.
I played with one at the big box store, and it seems like something I could really get into. However, the ones at the store did not have any comic reading apps in them. Are comics just scanned in and you have to zoom in around the page, or are they broken down by panels? Are DC books different from Marvel books in presentation? Is one better than the other? Any suggestion you can make about apps and tablets to maximize my digital comics reading experience would be a great help.
Now, I figured we hadn't talked about this in a little while, and things have come a long way since we have.
Yeah.
And plus, somebody here won't shut his yap about tablets and Android devices. Because he does other shows about it. It was you, Ron. I was it's not as well formed as it maybe could have been.
Yeah.
The point being that I think we all read not everything digitally, but a mix of things digitally in a bunch of different ways. We get a lot of previews and we read through other stuff, just however you can get the books. Yep. So I thought we might have some.
I mean, the easiest thing to ask is that your questions about are DC books different from Marvel in presentation? Are they better? That is just, don't worry. There's parity across the board. There's no, luckily we don't have to deal with, you know, they're. All the companies are smart enough now to take the digital files that they send to the printers and have those be the files they're using for the digital version. So they're crisp, the colors are rich, they're not scans, you know, like it's just quality stuff across the board.
They've been most probably digital, you know, files are digital sort of, that's how they originate almost.
Yeah, for 10 years.
Well, what you're seeing on the screen is more like what is made than we see on the page.
Exactly, yes. Yeah.
Page colors get muted and darker.
Yeah, because ink and all that stuff.
So if you went ahead with the Kindle Fire HD, now that's bigger than the original Kindle Fire.
That is bigger. Yeah, that's the 10-inch. That's the 8 is point something or 9.
Because I have a regular Kindle Fire that I have to use for reading books, and I hate it.
Because of the size?
Well, it's a piece of shit device, but also the size. The size is just big enough. Like, it works.
Yeah.
So
I have a Nexus 7, which is the Google tablet, which is running stock Android, and but it is a smaller, it's the size of the original Kindle Fire, and it's a little on the smaller side, but I have no problem with it. You can zoom in, you know, the company
app files are good.
Yeah the apps have the panel flow if you want to use that. I don't like to use that. I
don't either. You know when it doesn't, you know who ruins that though? Bendis.
Yeah.
Whenever the page goes double spread,
see, I have no problem with
that.
I have an iPad, so we got three different devices.
It works better on that.
Yeah.
And I've just learned at this point to, when I swipe the page, I swipe a little bit further to see if it's a double page spread.
Yeah.
So I never
rotate.
I never get caught.
Yeah. But the thing is that if you could get, like, if you got the new Kindle Fire HD, which is bigger, if you get the Nexus 10, which is the one, Sean, I would recommend to you, which is a 10-inch tablet, it's basically essentially, you know, it's a little smaller than an iPad, but it's much bigger than the 7-inch size, and you would have that you'd be able to manage double page spreads much easier. So
I got to say, I was looking at an iPad mini. Mm. That seems like a really good solution to me, because the iPad
– if you want to overpay –
I understand. No, I know where you are on that. But just in terms of I'm used to iOS as a way to do things. That's one of the things that frustrates me most about the Kindle, is that it's just not iOS.
Yeah.
So it annoys me. But like, I read a lot of books digitally, and the iPad is really big.
Yeah.
And so I found if you make it a little smaller, like the iPad mini, not taking cost into it or anything, but it seems like a good middle ground.
Just the iPad mini is just ridiculously hard. Like, doing a one-to-one comparison of the smaller tablets between Android and iOS. iOS is a ripoff, the amount of money you're spending on that device.
So. Like all of my Apple products.
Yeah, true. Well, no, some of them. No, I mean, I think the laptop, Apple laptops are reasonably priced for what you're getting for them. I even think
a MacBook Pro is way more expensive. I mean, you can get a laptop that's, you know, very similar for $400 at Walmart as opposed to $2,000.
But the I would say even the iPad is priced about right. But I think the iPad mini is, as of right now, is probably $100 overpriced at least.
Refurbished store.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you can do that. But who knows? So if you got one, Sean, write in and let us know what you got and what your experience has been like. And other folks, if you, you know, different devices. I mean, I'm like you guys, you prefer iOS. I have an Android phone, so I prefer my Android tablets and stuff like that. And the Nexus stuff from Google is just top notch. It's just great. So
yeah, I got to tell you, I still buy issues though.
Yeah, me too.
Like all that I can talk about it, I'm fine with it, everything. I don't, you know, I get a lot of stuff preview. I get a lot of digital copies ahead of time, but like,
My problem with digital comics is that I think that and it's totally because of our generation, our age, but I don't put as much value to it.
Mm-hmm. I thought like it was that you wake up in the morning and somehow you'd bagged and boarded your tablet every day. And you're how did I do that?
Yeah, it's a real pain. No, I just don't I don't get the sense of treasuring the thing as much as I do with my issues.
But I don't treasure my issues in the at all.
Yeah, well, I do. Yeah. No, but it's a bigger issue. But yeah, so
I would read only digital if I wasn't giving them away to kids. Right. I didn't have that.
Well, the problem with digital is that I forget it's there. That's the problem. Whereas the stack of issues point. I can see. Yeah, you know,
and they can haunt you. But the stack of digital, I have folders full of digital files, legally obtained. You know, that I'm not reading because it's easy to put them in a folder and be like, now my desktop is clean.
So if you have any questions, email us at contact@fanboy.com. We're getting towards the end of it, but we got something to talk about.
Oh, we certainly do. I've got to say, this Fear Agent Library volume, that is our January 2013 pick of the month, book of the month, is it's one heck of a package. And it's something we've been talking about for a really long time. In fact, for a little while, I thought maybe it's not happening.
Yeah,
but it did happen, and it's a real thing, and I'm super glad that I like went out and got it. You know, and it's as a package, it's better than I imagined it would be, and it was really fun to go back through. Just sort of like Sweet Tooth in a way, Fear Agent is sort of one of the books that's very near to our iFanboy hearts. Mm-hmm. I think that we all we've known about Rick Remender for a really long time. You know, before he was working at Marvel, and we all, you know, Connor had them when we were in a hotel room at Heroes Con in 2008, 2006, something like that. Mm-hmm. And we started reading it, and me and Ron were just kind of looking through the trades, and we're just looking at each other. This is really good, isn't it? That was back at the shows where we would sit in the hotel room at night and read books. We don't do that a lot anymore. But it, you know, the thing that keeps coming back to me as I think about Fear Agent is, like, it seems like why aren't there more books like this? This seems like such a perfect fit for comics, and it seemed like, you know, Rick Remender and Tony Moore and later Jerome Pena were the only ones to figure that out. Apparently, because a lot of people wouldn't buy them, but that doesn't mean it's not excellent sort of all the way through. So this is the first of two. The next volume is going to be coming out in April, I think.
End of April.
At which point they're going to reprint one, apparently, because it sold out now. They didn't print very many of them, like $3,000 or something like that. And they sold out immediately. So if you were lucky enough to grab one, good for you. This is the first sort of half of Heath Houston's long journey, as well as a whole mess of Tales of the Fear Agent stories, which are sort of shorter stories done by other people besides the main creative team on this. And one of the things is just how good looking this is for a book that, you know, you keep hearing about it as an indie book that was just done by some folks. It looks every bit as good and professional as anything that these guys are working on today, which with a full like sort of editorial compliment to them.
And the oversized treatment, just like it's a formidable volume, and it looks more beautiful than the trades or the issues ever did. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the pages just pop. The for whatever reason, the sort of coloring aesthetic that they decided to go with here, this crazy alien colors, and you know, Heath's orange and blue Fear Agent costume, it's gorgeous. Like it looks so good. Like if you go back and you look at, I have those big volumes of the Powers books, which is, you know, this is Rick Remender's version of Bendis' powers, you know, as far as how their careers work. And those reprints, those look awful. Like, they don't look good at all, but these are beautiful.
What's
and
funny
crisp.
Is this is one of those books where when I got the box from Amazon, I opened it up, I had to put it down on the table and just sort of look at it.
It thunked when you put it down.
Yes, yes. It was heavy.
Yeah.
Because it's just that the care and the craft that went into this presentation is great. I see people buying this for the first time this way, and I always hesitate that, but you know, to buy the biggest volume first before you try anything else. But
it's worth it. It's totally worth it. To be fair,
you know, like if you were to go out and buy the trades of this, you know, which aren't in print,
probably cost the same amount
or more. Yeah. It would cost more. You know, I bought this on Amazon for $28.
Right.
$28 for this book. That's absurd. I started doing the math. I was like, I don't know how Dark Horse isn't losing money on this.
They're not. Amazon is.
Yeah. Well, whoever. Somebody. Somebody's not making money that should be. Because, you know, I could easily see paying, you know, $100, $75 for this. It's a really nice package. And the stuff inside is sort of equally good. It's one of those things like, you know, when you're going to talk about, you know, like Bat Powers is to Bendis or Starman is to James Robinson, or this is that version of the thing for Rick Remender. This is going to be... Yep. You know, his story that he did, and I'm not meaning to take away from the artist, because I'm a giant Tony Moore fan, and you actually see him get a lot better over the course of this, and I'm a huge fan of Jerome Peña, of you know, this is his sort of first work that most people will have seen if you hadn't seen him before he came on, you know, at Marvel, and it's great looking. The two artists really complement each other really well. I think it's a different Peña than you would see on Avengers right now, but that has a little more to do with probably production than anything else, but
his style has evolved a lot too.
Yeah, that's true. I was having a hard time describing Opeña's work. Like, it doesn't look like anything.
It's unique and it's wonderful.
Yeah, so you know, it's great to look at, and you can totally tell the difference between the two of them in this book. But they mesh together really well and it fits. And I like, you know, like, it's fun. I mean, we've been saying that a lot, but it's also tinged with this sort of real world sadness, because Remender's made no secret of the fact that, you know, this, as so went, you know, his mood, so went Fear Agent, you know, so when Heath Houston is depressed, you know, there was some of Rick's own feelings in there, and I think that all came through.
It's his most personal work by far.
Yeah, but it's so ridiculous and out there at the same time. It never lost its fun, you know.
Well, it's because it's a grounded main character in the midst of this wacky, you know, sci-fi world of aliens and alien invasions and Fear Agent Core and all this, you know, it's a sci-fi story in the grandest sense, with a very real grounded character feeling a lot of real pain.
Yeah.
And you know, I could just, like, literally, I could hang out with Heath Houston on pages forever. And a lot of them is just him by himself talking to himself or drinking or talking to the monster, or it's not like Hellboy in that way. You know, like, you're cool with hanging out with him.
Yeah.
And that's definitely the case here. And he's put upon, and he's had a rough life, and he feels sorry for himself, and he can't get out of his own goddamn way. And you know, the trick of the book is, and the thing that they do the whole way through, is to just make it as hard on Heath as possible at all times, constantly. And that's a lot of fun to read.
No, it's definitely a modern classic must have. Like, you need to get this to have it on your shelf.
I can't get over how good these pages are as I look through them, and how good this book looks, and how well.
So, do yourself a favor. If you didn't get, order it now to get the next printing in April, and then get volume 2 before it sells out, because it will sell out. So, cool. Go to ifanboy.com, where you can read Josh's full book of the month review written. You can read all about that.
No one mentioned the Samuel Clemens quote at the beginning.
It was good. It was well done.
Just saying.
I liked it. So, excellent. So, if you enjoy even more talk about comic books, you can go to ifanboy.com on Mondays and get the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast. Last week, Paul talked to Brian Wood for a good 40 minutes about Star Wars. This coming Monday, I'm talking to Kelly Sue DeConnick about Captain Marvel #9. So go to iTunes and subscribe to that podcast so you don't miss an episode, or go to ifanboy.com on Mondays and listen to it.
When you listen to this, there will have been a Make Comics podcast.
Woo-hoo.
Bold.
That's what I'm. Yeah,
bold.
Yeah.
It's a bold prediction.
Bold and spicy. So there will have been a Make Comics podcast when you listen to this, which is when I speak with Andy Schmidt of Comics Experience. We will take an aspect of making comics and talk about the best way to approach that, as we have found in our experience, more so his, but also somewhat mine.
And you can subscribe to that in iTunes, to the feed in iTunes, the Make Comics, iFanboy Make Comics podcast, or go to ifanboy.com, where you can find that, as well as iFanboy Don't Miss, as well as this show, the iFanboy Pick of the Week, as well as all the other great content and conversations that are happening over on ifanboy.com. You can read Josh's Pick of the Week review for Star Wars. You can read all of the Spider-Man hoopla that went on this past week.
What?
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 Great stuff going on iFanboy.com. If you're into comics, you've got to be going there and participating. And don't miss anything. Follow us on Twitter.com/iFanboy or on Facebook at Facebook.com/iFanboy.
You can also become part of this show by emailing us at contact@ifanboy.com or leaving a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. We'll be back with voicemail next week after, because we won't have a book of the month for a really long time, which is, this is the best time to have book of the month is right after you've finished it.
Jerk.
I know. it comes around. That's how it works. But if you do call in for a voicemail, keep in mind that if you want it to be played, get to the point to let us know who you are and where you're calling from. And that's all. That's me. You know how it works. You know the drill.
And if you like the show, you can write a review on iTunes for this show, for the Don't Miss Show, for Make Comics, for any of the shows we do, or any of the podcasts you listen to would be great help for everyone to just go to iTunes and take a minute to write a review. You know, give a star rating, a couple words. That's all. You're in, you're out. 5 minutes. Not even. 2 minutes. So help spread the iFanboy word. You are our street team.
It's welcomed.
The iFanboy street team.
You are our street walker.
All right, So nice. So Josh got his first pick of 2013. We'll be waiting with bated breath to see what Connor picks next week.
Oh, it's me, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah, it is, yeah.
We know what the DC guy will do.
I'm going to eat a chip.
All right. So until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
What?
What?